Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 43 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And today we're going to be talking about, oh gosh, here we go again, social media. But in this case, huh? The double-edged sword? Well, wait a minute now. Before we hop into that episode of Her, I want to make sure you know it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate this podcast and review us. We really love reading these, and believe it or not, I read them all, every single one of them. All right. Hey, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about her.
Now let's talk about this whole issue of social media, the double-edged sword, and there's no one better to do this with than Dr. Don Grant. He's an internationally award-winning media psychologist, researcher, addiction specialist, and chair of the new American Psychological Association Division 46 on device management. Ooh, device management. Wait a minute. These devices cannot be managed. We're out of control. He's also a certified chemical dependency counselor, nationally certified group facilitator, and clinician educator and trainer. Good grief. I'm exhausted. Dr. Grant, welcome to Her podcast.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, they actually made me sound legit. I was listening to that thinking, who is that guy?
Yeah, like maybe you ought to get a personal life or something. I mean, you know, what can I say?
Well, it's kind of a topic that leads us and segues us into the topic. Does anyone even want a personal life? Because if it's not on digital, in some kind of digital presence, then what point is there? And that's kind of where we're at. And so that was actually a really good way to maybe launch into what we're going to talk about today.
Well, why is social media referred to as a double-edged sword?
Well, I believe it's because there are a lot of good things about it, and then there's some things that aren't so great about it. So, for example, I have friends and I have family all over the place, and certainly all across this country in the United States. So I love being able to see my cousins and their babies and my friends and people who are maybe a little more distal and catching up with their lives, seeing what is they're doing, and I do feel closer, and so I feel like we have a better connection. And I know that I, you know, back in the day, so to speak, would not have probably picked up the phone to find out about these things. So it really helps, keeps us connected, it keeps us feeling closer to some of our friends. But then on the other side of it, it can have that dreaded FOMO, that fear of missing out effect of comparing and contrasting. And so we tend to look at social media posts of other people, and it just looks like they are having the greatest life in the world, and our lives are just dismal and dull, and we're sitting here and we're not, you know, having this fantastic experience. What we don't realize is that the difference between real life and the any kind of digital life is that the digital life is self-architected, self-constructed, and I don't think that anybody ever puts up what they think is a bad selfie. In fact, there's a lot of studies that show that certain population demographics will put up several selfies or take 50 to 75 before they post one, and if it doesn't get enough likes, they'll tear it down within about 20 minutes. So, you know, I can stay connected, but it also causes us to be disconnected, and that has a lot to do with what we're talking about, something called absent presence and being in absent presence, where we are with people, but we're really not. We're more in the digital world. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, this whole issue of social media, I personally feel like it was a phenomenon that occurred with no how-to book, no guidance book, no limits or way to be able to understand how to strategically use it the best. And so what I have seen is that, you know, if you look at the psychology of it all, as you're an expert, in the body image world, for instance, you see all these doctored up pictures and you see men and women alike learning to feel very bad about themselves when they can't measure up to the countless, endless number of selfies and strange pictures that keep showing up everywhere. And so I see that as a very strongly self-destructive issue in people who are highly vulnerable. What is your advice about dealing with that?
I agree, and that's an excellent point, because one of the things that we see, and I work with a lot of teenagers, and I work with a lot of women clients, certainly, and we talk about the difference in how they manage their own social media, and the men are very different in the way that they do it than the women and what they're looking for, and certainly, as you pointed out, there's no end and probably won't be any end to the number of filters that are within apps that you can use. And when you are comparing yourself to others in social media, and especially, like you said, if you have any sort of dysregulation or you have any kind of social anxiety or body image issues, then that's going to be very difficult, because you're seeing all of these other pictures that have been maybe photoshopped or maybe have been filtered, and you're looking at yourself, and yeah, it's not a good thing. It can take a lot of women and men too, you know. I'm not trying to discount the impression or the impact that it can have on men or boys, but it can absolutely make you feel less than. And if you have any kind of fissures or any kind of social anxiety or any kind of body image or any kind of depression, there's lots of studies that are showing what social media can do to even deconstruct it more.
I don't think there's any question about that. And so that's one edge of the sword. The other one is in the field of addiction. You know, a food addict looks at food porn. A sex addict looks at porn, period, right? And all kinds of spectrum. And the same thing happens with any form of addiction. So you can really feast your eyes and ignite in a big way. What's your thought about that?
Well, and that's absolutely correct. And again, and I've done some studies on this, and many others have too. And I wrote I wrote an article a couple years ago, and I was comparing the smartphone to a drug, and I was noting the similarities. But what you're talking about, and one of the things that is the just biological base of it, is that there's a lot of dopamine hits that come from these devices and what we use. You know, you're feeling really depressed, or you're feeling alone, and suddenly you get a text message and there's a little dopamine hit. You go on social media and, you know, they're constantly about likes. Your social currency today, for especially the millennials, but for older people too, our social currency, our self-value, our self-worth has now been deemed, judged by the number of likes, the number of follows, the number of retweets, the number of reshares. And this is very, very dangerous, because there's a lot of Machiavellian, let's just say, intrigue that can go into social media and social media management. Especially, we're seeing this a lot among young women and teenagers, where it's wielded in a way that can be really nasty. And that's not even talking about the cyberbullying that we're seeing, that is much easier and much more wicked when it's veiled behind the cloak of cyberspace rather than in real life. And, you know, there's some videos that I just did a panel for a documentary called Audrey and Daisy about the worst case scenarios of this, where two girls were cyberbullied, and some videos of some things that had happened were put up on social media. So yes, everything you're saying, and you're right also, this is so nascent, there is no handbook. You know, even our parents couldn't teach us how to do this. The millennials learned how to do this on their own, and that's what they like to do. They're, you know, the millennials are very different than the baby boomers or Gen X. They like to figure things out for themselves. They don't like directions. But no one ever taught them. And because some of the stuff that happens is so insidious and so nefarious and so hurtful, they're probably not going to talk about it with anyone, and certainly not their parents or their mom or their dad. But you're right, there's no handbook. It kind of just landed very quickly, and so no one really knew what to do about it. And so what do we do? And that's what I'm working with, and that's what APA, when they decided to do the Device Management Committee, that's one of the first things we're looking at, is how to make suggestions to clinicians and educators of how to help people learn how to deal with this ambush that happened called social media that can have so many hydras and can be, you know, positive, but also can have some very negative outcomes.
Well, you know, I must tell you, I'm thrilled to know that the American Psychological Association has taken this on in that Device Management Committee. You know, from my science end of it, my colleagues at the National Institute of Drug Abuse, and that's Dr. Nora Volkow, who was the director, and others. She's one of my neighbors here. You know, I'm just saying, what they've discovered is that indeed, in a lot of the brain scanning work that they're now doing, they're seeing parallels in device addiction. I'll just call it device addiction at multiple levels, especially severe. And this could also include video devices, et cetera, gaming and that type of thing, because it's just a device after all. What they're finding is the same kind of biological fallout is taking place in the reward center in the brain. And if that's really true, then we need to study this yesterday, because that means we're going to be rearing an entire generation who are pretty much hooked on this stuff and can't seem to be able to connect eye to eye, literally, physically, or really see very little value in personal interaction the way most of us who are not millennials have always used. And so my question to you then is, when you're doing this work with the Device Management Committee, what are some of the digital detoxes and other methods you're considering to be able to help people and also the people they love? You know, you may be fine, but what about when you try to talk to your partner and he or she has their, you know, head buried in a device somewhere and can't seem to come up from it? It's like, hello, I'm here, just saying, you know, how about we connect eyes for just a moment before I throw that device out the window? So what do you think?
Well, I think you actually brought up a lot of good points, and one of them, certainly the biological basis, because, you know, as scientists and researchers, we look at different things, but I personally look at biological, psychological, sociological, and then environmental. So you're talking about things that are being studied right now. There are, you know, there's some allegations and some suspicions about gray matter atrophy, compromised white matter integrity, reduced cortical thickness, impaired cognitive functioning, you know, all of these things that they're looking at in the brain. One of the things that you said, which is really my wheelhouse, that I really, and I'm talking about this all over the country, is a sudden surge in what I said earlier called absent presence. I am so worried that with all of the social media and this faux connectiveness that we feel, that we are suddenly raising a generation that has no idea how to create relationships, how to do conflict resolution, and how to negotiate a successful relationship. And that's something that very, very concerning, because the last 2.5 generations, Pam, of people who knew how to do that, who knew how to make a face-to-face relationship and have that connection, are now walking the planet. And once we have abdicated, and we're the digital immigrants, so we're the ones who have had to learn this and bridge that digital chasm. But once we are gone and we have abdicated to the digital natives, if they don't know the value of this and they don't understand it, then I'm very concerned, and those of us who are working on this and researching this are extremely concerned about the future of relationships and their sustainability. Missed opportunities, you know, you go anywhere and you look and you see everywhere people are just sitting on their phones, not talking to one another. And those are incredible organic missed opportunities. You know, for example, you know, you're sitting somewhere and instead of just, you know, walking down the street on your phone, first of all, it's dangerous, but, you know, not passing someone and smiling and saying hello. And even smiling can give a dopamine hit. But sitting before a class or a meeting or, you know, certainly families at dinner, if everyone's on their devices, then we are not making the kind of connections that are valuable and sustainable. So that piece of it is something we're really looking at. The other piece is the digital detox. So what do we do? Because everyone knows this is a problem, but no one is willing to do anything about it. People are complaining about their stress and anxiety levels are heightened. Well, of course, because there's no downtime. We are tethered to these things 24 hours a day. We sleep with them next to our beds. We treat them as if they are a third person at the table. And all we want to do is take a selfie, post it, make sure we were there. I love, you know, I imagine these little 4 or 5 year olds, you know, doing a ballet recital up on the stage with their big, beautiful smiles and they're looking out at the audience. And instead of seeing the affect that we need in developmental stages of their parents' smiling faces to bond and feel trust, they're seeing the back of an iPad videoing it. That concerns me. So,
yeah, you think?
And there's so many pieces of this that really that we talk about, but you hit it right on the nail. You hit the nail right on the head, which is I'm concerned with the future generations, and they're not going to know how to negotiate and manage.
Well, it's interesting, you know, representatives of these young people are now beginning to give a shout out too. I recently read that Adele, you know, obviously the
did you hear what
speaker,
she did? It was awesome.
She totally called
out an
audience member who was flipping videotaping her entire performance, and she said, "Would you please put that thing down and actually be here, be present, and enjoy the real live performance." And she got practically a standing ovation because it's so true. What are you doing, people? I mean, enjoy it. Be present. See, that's the other thing, you know, being mindful with all of this. It's impossible to be mindful when you're basically lost in some device. You know, when you learn that, 30 to 40% of the recent Stanford freshmen sleep with at least one device. Sleep. God forbid you should miss anything, right? What are you doing? It's time to, you know, have more Adele moments, and we need to encourage that. But among that generation, you know, it's got to be that generation talking to each other saying, yo, okay, we got through the fascination. This is real special. But now we have to put some limitations that will be that will help promote our mental, spiritual, and physical well-being. We can't do that when we're buried in a device. How does that sound to you?
And I love that Adele did that. There's some other artists who have done it. And one of the things that you just said, and it sounds great, the problem is that we're all talking about it, but no one is really willing to do it. So here's where I think we're at. You said something that I think is most relevant, sleep. We need sleep. We need restorative sleep. And what is happening, it's not just 30. There's a couple studies that came out that said 70%, and we think that's conservative. 70% of millennials and even baby boomers sleep with their phone. Now, if you're hearing those notifications come off all night long, it's kind of like having when you have the baby monitor, when you have a kid, you're never really sleeping, you're waiting. If the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning or in the middle of the night is check your texts or check your likes or check, that's a problem, because the sleep deprivation is one thing. The lack of downtime that we're always on it. You see people on vacation and they're posting pictures. They're not being present, what you said, it's going to have to be a dedicated decision. One of the things that I suggest is, first of all, limit. Turn off your notifications. Turn off your push. Turn off. Don't have it beeping and going off all the time. It's just distracting. But the other piece is certainly do not sleep with it. Do not even have it in your room. And people say, well, it's my alarm clock. Okay, buy an alarm clock. You know, they sell them. You can get one for like $4. So don't keep it in your room. Don't keep it near you, because it's also the blue light. And I don't know what's going on with these phones, and we won't know for a long time. But scientifically, I'm thinking there are 9 million radio shows, even this one, movies, television, text, voice. There's so much going through the air that we don't see. I don't know what's going through me right now, but I know that about 14 Facebook posts, probably 1,000 tweets, a couple of movies, and maybe some porn is all going through my body. It's not going around it. So don't keep it next to your bed. You know, they used to tell us when we had the phones, we had all the phones, and then suddenly they say to us, oh, wait, we forgot to tell you. Get one of these Bluetooth things and put it around your ear, because it's not good to have the phone next to your brain. Oops. Well, but we're sleeping with it next to our bed. So I don't know. We do not know what's going to happen.
Absolutely no question.
We won't know for a long time, but we know that these phones are emitting and receiving information and things are going through them and they're being uploaded to the cloud. I hope nothing's wrong, but certainly you should keep it outside your room. Don't have it in a meal. Don't have it at a table. When you meet a friend for lunch or coffee or a movie, don't put the phone on the table. It makes it a part of the conversation. Put it away and turn it off. Be present when you're somewhere. If you're going to go somewhere, be present. I'm sure, you know, God forbid, in the hour you're there, the zombie apocalypse won't happen, the house won't burn down, and hopefully the kids will be okay and the creek won't rise. So be present. Don't make it a part. Certainly families, at least one night a week, please do it every night, but one night a week, put the devices away, make a fun little box, decorate it, put it far away, make everyone put their phones in the box, including the parents. Because one of the things I hear the complaints from the kids I work with, because I have a program for this called On Boot Camp, I work with teens, and they complain to me, they say, you know, we'll do it, but our parents do it. They're on the phone the whole time during dinner, texting, doing, you know, whatever. Well, social learning theory says we teach. So the parents need to model this behavior. Take the phone out of the kids' room. These kids are staying up all night with their phones. They shouldn't need it after 10 o'clock. Put the phone, don't put the charging station downstairs where the kid can come get it. Get a mass charging station if you got to charge them. Put it somewhere in a closet and give it to your kids as they're about to walk out in the morning or after they've showered and come down. So it's the device management, there's some simple things where you just unplug to reconnect. You know, take one weekend day where you don't use it. And all of this is lofty, Pam, and everyone says they'll do it, but they don't want to. Certainly not.
Well, it's that they don't want to. At the same time, what's also happening is that they're surrounded by a culture enables them to do it. And so
it
may be fine inside your own home, but out you go. Well, this is no different than trying to get someone off junk food. Well, fine. So your home is clean, but then they leave your home. Whoopsies. Things start getting a little ugly out there, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's the FOMO effect. That's the fear of missing out. But again, we have to encourage, and every one of us has to learn, because it's not just the kids. It's not just the millennials. I'm guilty, too. I had to learn this, and I have to try.
Hey, me too. I was totally busted.
Well, you have to see there's value. We have to establish and remind these kids who never knew it, because they grew up with this. They were given an iPad when they were six. You know, so with establishing and helping them understand the value of face-to-face, and the work that I did, my first study was on face-to-face versus online relationships and some things in sobriety, but it became a bigger study that I really looked at the difference between face-to-face and online relationships and presence. So if we don't show them there's any agency or value in actually sitting with someone, then they're not going to do it. You mentioned something that I just laughed at. I'm putting together a study right now, and one of the studies that I'm writing and I'm going to be doing next is on couples, on how devices impact, affect, effect couples. And they become a throuple. And, you know, the complaint that the partner's in absent presence. So they used to say that Johnny Carson was responsible for, you know, his opening monologue was responsible for killing sex lives. Well, now people are complaining that the devices are, because you're sitting in bed and, you know, before you go to sleep, you're checking your social media or you're playing Candy Crush. But I'm doing that study next on couples and the impact of devices on couples.
No, I love that word, throuble.
It's a throuple. There's three of you.
Hey, but wait a minute. It's more than that. It could be not three, four, five. I mean, you know, people do the combo of iPad and
right.
You know, smartphone, and you got yourself four folk in bed, and things start getting a little crowded in there, and then throw the dog or the cat in there. I mean, it could be kind of a
virtual
wild
dog, time. Because once virtual reality comes in and it's here, that's where I'm worried.
Oh, stop.
I mean, I'm fighting a losing battle, but I'm still going to be carrying this banner all the way to the barricade and beyond, because virtual reality, who's going to want to be? Life is dull and stupid. I can put on some glasses, and these glasses we're seeing, we're going to look back at these. These are so antiquated and clumsy. With a future evolution, and it's here, and it's not going to get worse. It's going to get better. Who's going to want to live in real life when I can enhance it?
I know, seriously. Well, this is why people binge watch, you know, Law and Order and God knows what else.
Westworld.
You know, I mean, hey, let's just get out of here all the way around. Tell everyone about your website and what they can discover when they go to One Recovery.
Well, One Recovery is actually a website. One Recovery is a different organization. So my program is called On Bootcamp, but I actually, my web presence, because I try to practice what I preach, I do several different things, as you kind of read as my little part of my resume. I do a lot of different things. So my website is not a website that is the Don Grant website. If I had that, I really would have no time. One Recovery is a non-for-profit, incredible organization for teens that my friend Lynn Peterson started, that I'm involved and engaged with, and pulled my On Bootcamp into. And I really, really encourage people to check this out. It is hers. I just support her, and I brought my program in for the kids to help them understand, go outside, you know, let's look at what's out there. But One Recovery is her non-for-profit, and I really encourage everybody to look at it, see what she's doing. It's really incredible. She's doing it all for free. She gives her services, and she's funding it herself. But we've done some great work with these kids. We've gotten them off the streets. We've gotten them off of drugs. We've done detention switching, where if they get in trouble in school, they can come and get involved with us and not have it on their record. It's really great. So that's different than what I do. Mine is On Bootcamp, which is the program that I have for trying to get the kids off of the technology and try to see that there's actually a world outside that's not digital.
Oh, my gosh. There can't be a world out there that's not digital. That's like totally insane and crazy. And
that's hashtag insane.
Yeah, hashtag this and hashtag that. Oh, my gosh. You know, we really are digital immigrants, aren't we? Oh, my gosh. So I want to just give us one last, you know, kind of wisdom thought. Just throw it out there about that double-edged sword of social media. Just a quick tip, a tool that our wonderful Her podcast listeners can benefit from.
Hashtag unplug to reconnect.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Okay, you heard it from the expert himself, Don Grant, Dr. Don Grant, who is our expert on all things social media with a fabulous background as a psychologist, researcher, addiction specialist, and now working with the American Psychological Association on device management. Rock on, Don. Jesus, God. Rock on, Don. You are absolutely fabulous and a wealth of knowledge. And you know something? I think you've laid out our challenges really well so that we can, you know, take a big, deep collective breath and say, yeah, we got some work ahead of us, but you know, it's going to have to be all of us. Don't dump it on your kids when you're not doing it yourself. Be a mentor. Let's do it together. All right. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Well, we want to attract a lot more people just like you. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. And while you're at it, please leave a review because we read those too. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.